There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 36. Continuing your preseason draft research to get you going for the ramp up to draft season. We are actually there, but it's getting closer to the big push, as you would expect. We're going to start something new here. We're going to talk ADP ranges for the next few weeks. We're going to do picks 100 through 150 on some recent draft champions and talk deep dives into that and much, much more. You can find myself on Twitter at BDentric. My co-host is always on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're great. I mean, quick peek behind the curtain. This episode almost did not happen this Thursday night. Bubba had some internet issues, but about an hour before go time, I got the text. We're good to go. So I'm pumped, man. Wouldn't be a Thursday night without this.
Yeah, I was texting Ryan throughout the day because I had to cancel some other podcasting, and I was not happy because Thursday night is Bubba and the Bloom time. Like, I enjoy it. Right. It's part of the deal, and we actually have a fun idea I wanted to, like, start doing. So I was like, oh, we can't start screwing this up. We got people. We got to do branding. We can't let people down already. And Spectrum decided after 6 hours of no internet, I could have it back. So that's very nice of them. And we're here to hopefully give you guys some info that'll be pertinent to your draft prep process. We'll do a little bit of recent news, though, because it's funny. A few weeks back, we thought we'd be done pretty much with recent news. And each week, we have like five or six things to talk about. And a lot of them happen like the day of or the day before the show, which is kind of nice. And the biggest one that happened today on Thursday, Aroldis Chapman signed with the Kansas City Royals. Now it's for less than $4 million. There are incentives in there, so they're not like forced to have to close him. They might want to close him to trade him. Who knows? I saw a lot of mixed reactions on this. Even Roster Resource has him as the seventh inning arm. What's your thoughts on Aroldis going to Kansas City? Because it was dreadful for Chapman last year, especially towards the end. But if any guy can figure it out and be dominant, maybe it's him.
That's tough, man. Like, yeah, I mean, it is interesting. So I didn't look at Roster Resource, but that is interesting. A seventh inning, and on HQ, we've got Chapman still behind Barlow as the guy. I mean, it's all guesswork at this point. My initial reaction, I tweeted out my Scott Barno, which is really bad.
I loved it. Loved every minute of it. Dad joke was, 101 right there.
Was in the drive through at Starbucks and I saw it. I was like, all right, I'll dad it up even more and do that. I mean, I don't think Chapman would sign somewhere to be a seventh inning guy. Is kind of that's the thing. That's kind of what I have been saying all along. Is like, for $4 million, I mean, I don't know. Maybe the guy needs money, but like, he's signing where he's going to close, I think. It's completely random that it happened to be the Royals, but my hunch is that Chapman signed and they told him he will be the closer. And that's pure speculation, but that's what I think.
Yeah, it's that. And it's also what for the Royals, like from a baseball standpoint, now it gives them a late left inning arm because Amir Garrett's the only other real lefty they had in there in the back of the bullpen. So now, you know, we've seen them potentially in the past go kind of a committee when it comes to situational pitching from time to time. It gives them that option now. So it should still probably be Barlow for the most part, but it gives them another option. And we know, you know, all it takes is one bad pitch in the guy's arm or whatever. And now they have another guy with experience back there. So we'll see. We'll see what the Royals can put together for it. Tommy Pham, this is kind of a bummer to me because as much as I don't like the Yankees, I thought he'd be perfect for the Yankees as a situational pick. Went to the New York Mets, though, which just kind of muddied the water to me because they already have Marcana. They have, Starling Marte. You already have Nemo in center. Nemo. So now Pham slots in as, like, the fourth outfielder. And when I was drafting him late in DCs and NFBC 50s, thinking he'd sign somewhere where he'd play every day, this wasn't what I had in mind, Ryan. So what's your thoughts on this one?
Same. I mean, the chances of, like, Marte making it through the full season healthy is pretty low. So, like, the fourth outfielder is going to get some time. But, yeah, this is not – the Pham's the ultimate, like, typical guy you want to – I mean, I'd love to see him back on the Reds or something where he would just get playing time in a decent park and play. I think a pretty big cut to Pham's fantasy value. And really, like, I don't know. I've been a big Pham guy, but, like, I'm probably biased. Like, I'm thinking more of the Pham from 2017 to 2019, who was, like, a pretty consistent $25 player. Since 2020, Tommy Pham really hasn't done much. He did go 15-14 in 2021, but hit just .229. Last year only stole 8 bases and 554 at bats. So, like, he pretty much did get full-time playing time last season, and Pham didn't do much with it. So that hurts even more now with on the Mets. So I'm pretty much not drafting him in any kind of fab league. Maybe late draft and hope, but that's about it.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is the Mets need a new GM for fantasy football. It's the only thing that makes sense to me. Yeah, we can run the show, but that's the only thing that makes sense there at all. Boston Red Sox, they went and signed Adam Duvall to a pretty team-friendly deal. We know the power he has. He might really enjoy that green monster. That could be a fun one for Mr. Duvall. I'm really curious to see how the playing time shakes out because Roster Resource has him as the starting center fielder with Verdugo in right and Yoshida in left. Puts Jaron Duran back to the minors, not even on the roster at the moment, who was the center fielder last week before this signing. It puts Enrique Hernandez at shortstop now because we thought maybe Elvis Andrus or somebody would go to short. So I don't know if I like Duvall in center field for one, but offensively from a fantasy standpoint, not a bad landing spot, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you just want him to land somewhere where he's going to play. And I do think, I mean, for better or worse, center field is his, and I don't know. Duvall still, like, even though he, I mean, he led the National, this is crazy, but he led the National League in RBI 2 years ago. 2021, 113 RBI with, I think, Atlanta and Miami. And I don't know. Like, the dude just hits fly balls and strikes out. So, like, Duvall hit .213 last year. We're projecting him at HQ to hit .221 with a, 52% fly ball rate. That's some Ryan Schimpf lore there.
Wow, there's a fly ball.
Exactly, man. I had to pull that. I think Schimpf was like a 60% guy. Like he was unreal. But yeah, maybe Schimpf light for Duvall. But like, I don't know. This is just the typical guy who's going to drain your batting average. And I don't know what the power looks like as he enters his mid-30s with coming off wrist surgery too. That's the other big thing. So very skeptical. I'm glad he'll play, but not someone I'm really looking at.
Yeah, it's an interesting move, to say the least. Brian Anderson signs with the Brewers. Not sure has a ton of fantasy relevance. If anything, it might be more of a platoon situation in Milwaukee because they still have, Luis Urias doing most of the third base work there. So I think it's more of a platoon unless you have something else on that.
No, I mean, I looked in prep for this, and the numbers are very underwhelming. The career year for Anderson was in the 2020 shortened season, but the last two seasons hasn't cracked 400 at-bats, hasn't really shown even league-average power or league-average batting average. And you tack on the platoon situation, that's likely to happen in Milwaukee. I don't see Anderson being a full-timer there. Pretty hard pass.
Yes, indeed. Let's go to the Windy City. Last week we talked about Chicago, or last week or the week before, signing Eric Hosmer and basically what are they doing with Matt Mervis? Well, we thought maybe a DH situation. Now they signed Trey Boo Boo. Yeah. Trey Mancini comes to town and they say right away, Matt Mervis is starting AAA, is what they said. So there goes that whole pipe dream, unless something crazy happens on here. But on the Mancini side of things, there's a 2-year deal, which is kind of nice. So he's going to get some run there in Chicago. Gonna DH primarily. He could you know, play some first base when Hosmer sits or whatnot. But giving him regular at bats in Wrigley, I always love Trey Mancini. I think there's more than what we've seen recently, but where you get him ADP wise, I think he's much more appealing to me now in Chicago.
The only thing with Mancini is like, and I mean, I hate to bring up, you know, all the, I'm definitely rooting for him. I wonder how much of a happy fun ball guy he was, or currently is, I guess. Like 2019 is very much an outlier for Mancini compared to pretty much every other. He did hit 293 his rookie season, but 2019 hit 291 with 35 homers. He hasn't really sniffed that rate in 21 or 22. He's hit like 247 ish with like 20 homers over mostly full seasons each of the last 2 years. At HQ, we're projecting only 65% playing time. There's kind of four guys for three spots, I think, with Mancini, Hosmer, Wisdom, and maybe Morel. So, like, I'm too low on Mancini, definitely compared to you, Bubba, but, like, I don't know. This is a very, like, bland profile from what I'm seeing.
No, and you're probably right because you're at least looking at the numbers in front of you. I know I have a lot of biases when it comes to Mancini.
And well, you've got his nickname on lock, man.
Yeah, Trey Boo Boo. That's my boy right there. And I root for him and hope for the best. Is it probably worth it? We'll see. I guess when you look at ADP, though, at least I want to see this before I keep spouting off. He's going close to 300 right now, so not costing you a ton. So that makes it kind of entertaining, but I don't disagree with what you said, as he's only had that one big year. Can he do it again? Maybe. We'll have to wait and see. So to be determined with Trey Boo Boo. Last but not least, Andrew McCutchen goes back to the Pirates where it all began. I love this signing personally. Like, why couldn't Tommy Pham have a situation like this? I know the ballpark's not great for hitting, but a place where McCutchen theoretically should play as much as he wants. Like, really, as long as he's healthy, they have no reason not to play him. He's there to keep, you know, getting the young guys going. He's maybe one last swan song in Pittsburgh. Like, and he can still play. Like, he's not an elite player, but he can still get you 15 to 20 jacks and steal, you know, 5 to 10 bases, hit 240, 250. So he's not crushing you by any means. He's not costing you a lot. He was like an ADP around 400 last week. It's creeping up a little bit, but still not too costly. I love this for him, just for the fact that playing time should be there, which is what we want with guys signing right now.
Playing time should be there as long as he's healthy. I mean, there are a lot of bodies. I don't know what the hell.
Do we consider those real bodies in Pittsburgh though?
Yeah, I mean, it is the bodies are my boy Miguel Andujar. They brought in Connor Joe, obviously Brian Reynolds. Maybe Jack Stravinsky. Yeah, I think maybe the next move is like this would be such a Pittsburgh thing. Get Andrew McCutchen on the cheap to bring back kind of the, you know, the legend, build up some fanfare, and then actually trade their best player, Brian Reynolds. There's a lot of bodies in the outfield. None of them are all that great. So, like, yeah, I agree. McCutchen probably is going to play as much as he can. What's his injury history? It's a lot of knee stuff in 2019-21, but he's been fairly durable lately. And, like, a mid-teens, almost $20 player when he is healthy. Yep. So, makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm a fan. I kind of wish they would have held off a little longer in draft season to sign him, but I think they wanted to lock him in before they do trade Brian Reynolds is what it feels
would
like.
Would you take McCutchen over? So he's going about it. This is before the signing, but ADP 430. Would you take him over Mancini? I know they're different players, but you would?
Yeah, I move McCutchen. I'd have to double check, and people think I'm crazy, but my rankings are always different, especially when you get to the back end of positions where it's literally like you're grasping at straws with certain guys. I just love what I consider consistency of quote unquote when healthy with McCutchen. I have him around like 60, 65th outfielder for me. So I'm probably higher on him than most, but I really think he can give him 130 games. I think we could have a lot of fun with McCutchen this year. So that's my thoughts. All right, let's get into our fun concept for the next few weeks here. Instead of going round by round, we're going to differentiate a bit and go, you know, pocket by pocket of ADP. And
I like that.
Yeah, and we're going to go the picks 100 through 150 this week, and you can do the math, 50 picks at a time for the next few weeks here. And I'm gonna let Ryan go with this, the first little chart he has here to kind of break down the positions, if he wants to give a synopsis of that. And then we'll go into some hitters, some pitchers in these ranges. We got some debates, a lot of cool stuff here. And then obviously got some awesome listener questions. And for the weeks to come, look for the tweets, because we could basically cater these episodes to your guys' questions on these regions of players. So Ryan, the floor is yours.
Yeah, for sure. With the tweets, they'll come out a little bit. Hopefully it'll come out a earlier, little bit earlier.
Yes, usually earlier based on, you know.
We definitely thought we were not doing the show tonight. So it was last minute for the East Coasters, for sure. But I don't know. I think just in general, this concept, like, I'm a huge middle rounds guy. I think that's where drafts are won. I think the attention that's paid to the first 100 picks, while warranted, most if not all of those guys are really good, and you're just trying to not screw up in your first 100 picks. And I just think we need to, I don't know, there's so much out there, like, let's just differentiate a little bit and really focus in on not even position by position, but yeah, like you said, pocket by pocket. I like that. And go 50 picks at a time. We're gonna cover, I think it's gonna be good. We're gonna look kind of like macro level at positions of strength in this pocket, as well as categories. And then to cover, I don't know, maybe like 20 out of the 50 guys. And then if there's listener questions, we'll get to more. So I don't know. I think it'll be fun. We decided to start at 100. So like, here's the big thing. So I ran this the other day for by position. So number of players drafted by position and picks 100 to 150. I'll tweet this out as well, just so it's out there. But catcher, there's 6. First base, there's 5. Second base, 2. So only 2 second basemen being taken in this pocket. Third base, 1, which I'll get to in a second. Shortstop, 5. Outfield, 12. And then 20 pitchers. And you compare, I think that the big things that, at least from a position standpoint, that stand out to me is really third base. I mean, you've talked, Bubba, a lot about how third base kind of drops off, especially after like Gunnar Henderson. We're seeing that in the ADP, where third baseman, there's 8 being taken in the top 100. And then just 1. And really that third baseman, that one third baseman is Max Muncy. And maybe you're playing him at third, but he's also second base eligible. So
yeah, when you said the one, I looked straight at the sheet next to me and I'm like, oh wow, it's Max. And it's funny because like we talked about him, and I said like the cliff at Gunnar Henderson, and Max I've kind of thrown in there as the next guy, and I've taken him in a couple drafts now as my third baseman with the flexibility option. But yeah, it shows you, because the weird part is, like Ryan said, he'll tweet this out, but picks 1 through 100, there's 8 third basemen. And so then it literally just drops. And it's not like it was, you know, a sporadic. It was just boom. It goes 6, then 2, then 1. It's just a big drop off at the position. So not saying it's the right or the wrong thing, but what's good about seeing these pockets and the positions going in these pockets is it kind of helps you with roster construction. And that's kind of the purpose. We're not just like breaking down the players for you, because we can talk players all day long. It's telling the players in these regions. So when you're navigating your draft, like we talk about it, and a lot of great people do it. I know Ryan does it, you know, drafting backwards or like planning a draft out. Right here, you're seeing your region of like, hey, in this region, I might need to approach these types of positions, because it either drops quickly, or this is where the bulk of them are and I can maybe find value. There's lots of ways to go about it, basically. So it's a good way to look at it.
No, it's all about putting that puzzle together. Like, yeah, there's so much analysis done on players and that sort of thing. But like, you need to look at third base, again, for example, and say, okay, I either need to get one early, get one of those top 8, or I'm not going to get one in these middle rounds. I'm going to, you know, instead look at picks 150 to 200 where there's 6 third basemen going, which we'll talk about next week, and figure out which ones I like from there, and then work your way up from there. So that stuck out to me. Second base was also, there's only 2. There's 7 second basemen going in the top 100.
One of them is Muncy too.
Yes. Yeah. Two of them. And that's that man again. Maxwell, who's the other second baseman? Glaber Torres,
yeah.
So those are your only 2 options at second base and third base. That gets a little rough. The other interesting one that I found, we talked, I mean, Bubba, you're the catcher king.
This is the region, man.
Is catchers, this is your kind of region. There are 6, so 5 catchers in the top 100. There are 6 catchers going off the board in this part. So when we say catcher is deep, like that top 10 kind of, this is the part of the draft in picks 100 to 150 where if you want to grab one of those top 10 catchers before it drops off a little bit, you got to go ahead and do it. You got Alejandro Kirk, Wilson Contreras, Big Willie Contreras, Sean Murphy, Tyler Stevenson, all going in this range. And MJ Melendez as well.
MJ Melendez. But see, that's why that's another great point is we've talked about it and other people have, like you said, the top 10 catchers. Well, now you know, hey, if you're planning your draft out, this is how you got to take them now. You can't wait any longer. Otherwise, you're not getting the top 10 catcher if that's what you want. Mm-hmm. And so it does make it quite intriguing. Obviously, the pitching we're going to talk about is a lot of closers and then some very interesting starters, in this region where it kind of, hopefully SP3s, but could be SP2s as well. So let's just get into it. Let's have some fun with it. We mentioned the realm of catchers with Kirk, Melendez, Wilson Contreras, William, Big Willie Contreras, Sean Murphy, and Tyler Stevenson. So that's kind of a pick your poison if you want a catcher situation there. We've talked about them a lot. But what I think is really interesting when you look at this is one position is that first base position. Because five go in that top 50, and then two in the next 50, and then five more in this region. And this is where it's fun because we've kind of talked about, you know, certain positions you have to kind of just wait on just by process of, hey, if I want an outfield early, I want a pitcher early, whatever. First base could be one that looking at this, you could definitely wait on and know you're going to get one here. And that's this kind of helps paint that picture for you. Because you got Nathaniel Lowe, you have Reese's Pieces, you have CJ Krohn, you have Christian Walker, and you have Andrew Vaughn. And it's pretty funny to me because everyone's talking about Christian Walker, about this amazing year he had last year, and how it could have been even better, should have been even better, looking at the advanced metrics and everything. And I'm not arguing that at all. But to see he's still going this far behind some of these other pieces, like seeing him there and seeing Nathaniel Lowe so high at 106 was a quite a gap situation for me looking at first base. So that stood out to me when I was looking at this because catchers to me, yeah, pick your poisons. Like I understand that people don't want to take catchers early. If they do, if you want to, this is the time, as you said. But first base is another one because putting roster construction together, if you want to go pocket ace early, go one ace and one five category outfielder or shortstop early or whatever, maybe get J-Ram early. This might be your region to get a first baseman unless you want to wait for Rizzo or Mountcastle or something. So that stood out to me looking at the hitters.
And even like, again, kind of previewing next week too, there are eight more first basemen going 150 to 200. So that even kind of
another reason to
further
wait,
bolsters your point. So, I don't know. Do we want to talk ADP battles, anything? Let's talk a little bit category-wise.
Yeah, so I was going to look at the categories. Like when you're looking at your – because, of course, you know, it wouldn't be a Ryan Bloomfield project without color coding beauty
we've
stuff.
We've got colors on this thing. Yeah.
So it helps dummies like me, cavemen like me, be able to navigate this really quickly. So obviously green is good. And when looking at the pockets here, we still have a good amount of stolen bases, if you want, potentially, in there. And a lot of 20-plus home run guys. So I know it's just like a first glance kind of shooting from the hip thing, Ryan, but when I look at the stats over here for the hitting side, and I look at potential top end starters on the pitching side, this almost makes me kind of want to, I don't want to go pitching early, but I know I can go get stats in this range if I need it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And the thing that stuck out to me, and so for this episode and future episodes, when I cite projections, I pulled these all from ATC. So Ariel Cohen does an amazing job, and ATC was released earlier this week. So I am using ATC's projections to kind of color code and try and look at category wise, since we just talked about positions where there's some strength. The big thing that stuck out to me, Bubba, is you mentioned the 30 homer bats, which there are definitely a few of those, is stolen bases. You can still get your steals in this range. We've got Jake McCarthy with a 30 stolen base projection going at 120 overall. He's the kind of guy where, like, if you don't have steals, this is the time to pick him because he's not a zero in other categories. We'll get to him in more detail a little bit later. But the thing that really sticks out is just the the quantity, the volume of like 10 to 15 stolen base guys. We've got Willie Adames, another big Willie at 8 steals. Tyler O'Neill, 16. Seiya Suzuki, Jeremy Pena at like 11 or 12. Ahmed Rosario, Stephen Kwan, 15, 16. Yelich, 15. Nico Hoerner, 18. You can, if you're going through your draft and if you don't want to put all of your stolen base eggs in one basket, I think you can this year, at least again, according to the projections, you can kind of piece together enough steals going 10, 15 at a time. There's enough of those guys in this pocket that are available to you.
And it's really helpful for a player like me who I've confessed in recent years, power has been a problem for me. And in my early drafts, I've made a point to try to get like a Yordan Alvarez or a Big Meat Pete or something like that. Like, give me a dude that's going to give me 35 to 40 bombs on the books, maybe even pair him with another 30 home run guy out the gate and not be concerned, like so concerned with getting a five category guy. Like that's obviously the goal in the early rounds. You want that five category stud. But being able to see here, it's like if I go get two big power bats and maybe I get a combined 10 stolen bases out of the two, mm-hmm. I can come here and, you know, hope Tyler O'Neill bounces back. Go get a Stephen Kwan or a Med Rosario because I don't need the power anymore. I can get that stolen base asset. Plus, their top of the order bats are going to score runs too. And they hit for average. Like, there's little things that you can look at along those ways. It makes Christian Yelich much more viable mm-hmm. than other seasons. Like, little bits and pieces like that. We talked about Yelich quite a bit, that this is who he is now. He's going to score a ton of runs. So, I think it really helps paint the picture in your head. And I'm going to say the word way too many times is roster construction. Because that's what this is the purpose of, but it allows you to realize that I think it's been beaten into our head so many times. You have to leave the first round or two with five category studs. Sure. You'd love to, like, that's obviously simple.
It would help, but
you don't have to. You don't have to. Like, the biggest thing I've tried to emphasize this whole podcasting preseason is not so much positional scarcity, but statistical scarcity. Just get the final stats. Don't worry about how you get there. Like, that's what you need to worry about, and this is how you can do that. So that's a really good point with the stolen base department here. And then a lot of batting average too, honestly. A lot of batting average guys that I know it dries up the farther down we go. We'll see. But there's still a bunch of guys projected for like 270 plus, 265 plus, which in this era of baseball, pretty darn good.
Yeah, you've got Kirk, Lowe, Rosario. I'm going 270 and above. Kirk, Lowe, Rosario, Kwan, Correa, Casty, Ward. They're like 264, but we'll round up. Nico, Chris Bryant, Tyler Stevenson, Andrew Vaughn. That's 11 out of the like 25, 26 hitters that go here that are projected to hit 270-ish or higher. You are starting to see some of the batting average drags. We've got like a 230 from NJ Belendez, Max Muncy at 230, your boy, Reese's PC's at 237, which I think I know you take the over on. I think I
take
too.
The over every time. The projections hate
Reese's. Take any over.
They hate them.
But yeah, you can still kind of bolster average. I'll be interested to see next week with the next 50. Yep.
If it drops
what average looks like. But you can still get your higher batting average guys. And then just one last piece, like what you were saying, Bubba, about like taking in a Yordan or Pete Alonso. This is why I think you can do that this year, is because you can kind of backfill with
100%. Makes a big difference. And then when we look at the pitching side, like, I've pretty much been on weight pitcher, because we talk about how deep it is, because pitchers are going later so far. Yeah. And they are. They obviously are. But you start to look at these pitchers, and, like, starting pitcher-wise, you got, like, Logan Webb, who I love. You got Nestor, Gilbert, Hunter Green, so on and so forth. Really good pitchers. But do you want them as your SP2 or your SP3? That's the question when looking at this, because if you want them as an SP3, you might need to be a little more aggressive on the pitching side early. That's where, like, looking at this range goes, because obviously it's only going to get worse from here when you think about starting pitcher. And I'm not saying these guys are bad, but do you want to go to battle with these guys as your SP2? I've done it in a few drafts.
No, you don't. I don't think you do. I mean, unless you really like some of these guys.
That's what I'm saying. So that's why it stands out looking at that. Another reason why you might want to change those early round approaches. We haven't really seen change yet.
This definitely, and yeah, just talking through it, eyeing the boards, looking at the projections, this feels a lot more hitter heavy part of the draft, 100 to 150 than pitcher heavy. Closer wise, so I mean, we just talked about Barlow potentially biting the dust. You've got.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Four maybe closers, Bednar, Holmes, Daniel Bard. I don't know if you want to call Alexis Diaz a closer. We'll get to him later in the show. This is where it's like the last part where you can even think about getting I say full-time closer in quotes. There's just not much there. And really, Bednar and Holmes are 100 ADP and 104 ADP. They're right at the top. There.
Yeah.
And so you're not really getting a closer here. And I a lot of the pitcher names, they're good pitchers. I'm just not super
volatile.
High on, so.
Very volatile pitchers.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, you know, people talk about projections. They talk about the ranges of projections. These starting pitchers have very, very wide ranges. Like, we could literally sit there and not be surprised with option A or B for either one of the pitchers by the season's end. Like, we played that game at one point last year, like over unders. We could do it right now and we could be completely wrong on both sides and not be shocked. The other thing I noticed with the starting pitchers on this range, another reason to take two aces early, not pocket ace, but early, your whip's going to start taking a quick hit here. It's starting to get to 1.2, 1.3. Yeah, it's starting to, you're not getting too many generous whips. Like, you got Kershaw, you got Severino. I'm still questioning that one a little bit. Like Lance Lynn, but he's close to 120. It's getting a lot more in that murky whip water, which is something we've talked about on the show before, is a category that I don't think gets enough attention paid to it, especially not by me. So that's one that stands out as well.
And strikeouts stands out. So you've got Hunter Green going at an ADP of 112, very polarizing guy. I'm sure we'll talk about him a little bit more. He's at 197, but outside of Hunter Green, strikeouts are starting to dry up. There's not many guys even over 170. You got Blake Snell at 170, Nick Lodolo at 176. That's it over 170. You got a few 160 guys in here, so I'm kind of cherry picking and arbitrary numbers and whatnot, but strikeouts are starting to go down quite a bit, which again, I don't know. I'd love to have I think three starters before I even get to this range, and in general, kind of skip pitchers from 100 to 150. Maybe a couple of these guys that I'm high on, I'd be okay with as an SP3. But that's about it.
Yeah, SP3 for sure. I have a couple of these guys that we'll talk about later. I have zero problem with an SP3, but that's because I trust the picks I took before them. Let's put it that way. Anything else on the charts? You want to get into the ADP battles?
No, I think we covered that. I think we covered that pretty well. Last thing on the power, you mentioned a bunch of 30 homer bats. Bubba, just to put some names to those, Willie Adames, 28. Buxton, 31. Under.
Yes, exactly. Under.
Reese Hoskins, 29. Over. Right. Over. Santander, 28. CJ Crone, 26. Muncy, 27. Christian Walker, 26. So those are, and we're not going to sit here and, you know, nitpick the projection, you know, whatever, but those are generally your big power bats that are available. So there's quite a few different ways to go on the hitter side, depending on what you need statistically from your first few picks.
Yep. So very, very eye-opening stuff here when you're planning the early. If you're in a 12-team league, I guess it's like rounds 9 through 9 through 15 or so, give or take. And in a 15-team league, now it's more like rounds 7 through 12 or 13.
Yeah, you're looking, so. And that's also why we decided to do picks instead of rounds, just to include. I mean, you could be a 10-team person and, and listen to this, or 12-teamer, or a 15. So yeah, this is like eighth round, 15 for a 12-er.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. Let's do ADP battles. We each picked a couple here to go over based in this pocket of picks. I picked the first one here, and they're going at picks. I just saw Christian Yelich at 127, Anthony Santander at 131. And if you look at the ATC projections, you got Yelich at 249, 17 homers, 15 steals, Santander 244, 28 and 1. So similar averages. One's got more power, one's got more steals. The other reason I put this on here is because I think from us talking about Yelich so much, I'm kind of like, I don't mind him now, because it's like the whole acceptance thing. This is who he is. Like, I've accepted it and I'm good with it. Where Santander, it's like, I've loved him in DFS in the past, 33 home runs last year after 18, 11, and 20. The pop's been there, but last year's pop was pretty extraordinary, and he doesn't run at all. So it's an interesting conundrum. Like, do you think he's still that 30-ish home run guy, like the projections say, or does he revert back to maybe more of a 20 home run guy? And then it's probably not much of a conversation. So I'm going Team Yelich on this one. What about you, Bloomfield?
I am too. I mean, the cop out answer is they're different types of players, so it does kind of depend what you did early on. But Santander, I just think you fall into that, I don't know, Adam Duvall trap again, where you've got a 50%. Fly ball guy. The contact rate is pretty good with Santander, so like, I don't think he's gonna go down to like 210, but Santander has hit 240 each of the last two seasons. There's a lot of guys you can get later in the draft at 240 with even 25 home run power, so you can get a Santander light later on. And a Santander light, that sounds like something someone should be drinking. Yelich, I think Christian Yelich could very much benefit from the rule changes. He's been a 100%. Successful base dealer in the past, and I think that's 86% success rate last season with 19 steals. I think he could shoot up mid-20s even. I mean, HQ's projecting 15. I would go a lot over that. I think Yelich is the type of runner that's going to benefit from the rule changes. Not going to hit you a lot of homers. 59% ground ball rate last season, Christian. Let's
get up his average though too, with no shift.
But yep, you're right.
I'm all right like that.
You're right. So it could be like a 260 guy with 20 bags and 15 homers. Like that's pretty sweet, and it's well rounded, especially if you're in these early leagues where you can't trade or you can't do fab. Like, you want to be as balanced as possible, and Yelich is a lot more balanced than Santander. Yeah.
100% with you. And you mentioned there's guys like Santander's profile later on. And just like guys we'll talk about next week, yeah, Hunter Renfroe, Giancarlo, if you think he's going to stay healthy. Even Mitch Haniger could be interesting. Those guys are going like two rounds after him. It gets deeper. Like, there's way more options that relate to that profile. Those are just two like immediate spot, or three immediate spots, like 2 to 3 rounds later, that you could get a similar profile, and you wouldn't be shocked in the end game with that one. We'll go back and forth. So I'll let you do yours next, and then I'll do one.
All right. Let's see where we want to go. Shortstops. So this is, we were kind of saying before, the part of the draft where that top tier of shortstops is falling off. So you've got Correa, Rosario, Adames, Jeremy Pena, Nico Hoerner going here. Jeremy Pena versus Ahmed Rosario. There's two guys that are projected pretty close that I want to get your thoughts on, Bubba.
Yeah, this is fun, because I think I've talked about Pena before. I've been it's like the Adames Pena range. I want to try to lead with one of the two. For me, when it comes to these two, it's Rosario's got the better batting average, and I'm not going to doubt that. I think he's going to have that for forever. If they keep Pena at the top of the order behind Altuve, that should be premium in Houston. I think he's going to run just enough, and more importantly, I think he's got the power to keep it going. So if I am doing the whole draft builds we've been talking about, I'm still going Pena, because I think he's kind of more rounded, like we talked about Yelich, where I'll get a little bit of power. I'll get power, a little bit of speed, decent average, lots of runs scored. Where Rosario, I think we've seen the power peak potentially. Maybe there's more. He's still super young. But I think it's more of a batting average, run scored, stolen base profile with Rosario, where I want the that with a little less batting average and more power with Pena. So I'll take Pena.
It kind of pains me to say Pena, not because I don't like the guy, but I'm a big Rosario fan. But yeah, I think so your point on the I mean, we were both all over him last season.
We're paying a higher price now.
Yep, that's true. And the power to what you said just has not developed. So I'll go Jeremy Pena. Those hidden counting stats in that lineup are fantastic. I've heard some whispers about Pena was. The numbers were kind of rough in the second half last year, and you could maybe say that the league started to adjust to him, yada yada.
Anybody see the postseason though?
It was BABIP, and yeah,
he was the MVP in the postseason.
He did quite okay while we were out in Arizona. Then so again, and another similar to my Yelich thing. I can't give Yelich credit for this and not Pena. An 85% stolen base percentage rate. New rules. I think Pena is going to even see more of an uptick, get closer to Rosario. I don't know if that stolen base gap is as wide as some of the projections might say between those two. So I'll go Pena. Yeah,
I'm with you. It's I don't want to say just like Yelich, but it's like that well-rounded profile we're talking about. I think he's got it in Houston. My other one was Stephen Kwan versus Jake McCarthy. And this is a fun one for me for a few reasons. I want to get your thoughts first on how you want to approach the solid floor to the potential ceiling.
I got to go McCarthy. I like Kwan, but I think there's just a lot of David Fletcher risk here. Kwan runs a little more, so I'm not going to go full Fletcher, but everything else kind of reeks of Fletcher. Kwan did finish well. He had 5 home runs, 14 bags in the second half, and hit .318. Yeah. That's pretty damn good. But there is zero power. The 6 home runs that Kwan hit last year in the Forecaster, we have an expected home run metric based on StatCast. 3 expected home runs. He had a 1% barrel rate. It's really hard for me to not or to take someone with zero power. So I'm going to go McCarthy, he's not like the biggest prospect, but obviously anyone who fabbed McCarthy last year reaped those rewards. Played all 3 outfield positions. I'm not sure playing time is that much of an issue for McCarthy, and really platoons, he was just as good against lefties from a contact rate standpoint and a slash line, identical .427 slug against lefties and righties for McCarthy. So there's some more risk, I think, with McCarthy, just that there was a half season and breakout and flash in the pan. But I think McCarthy could steal 30, 40 bases and have a pretty good batting average. I think that's a lot more valuable than Kwan.
Yeah, if you're concerned with your steals, it is McCarthy. The one thing I'm going to mention, and I'm going to try not to plug a lot of my shows, but I just had Ryan Roof on to do the Cleveland preview, and he brought some really interesting Stephen Kwan stats to the table, because I've been anti-Kwan the whole time. And you mentioned the second half he had, which was tremendous. Kwan also was shifted on about 85% of the time. I think he hit 260-something. The rest of the time, he hit .361 when he wasn't shifted on. He's a major opposite field hitter, which was kind of weird when you think about that, but maybe that was because of the shift he was doing that. So maybe he won't do that as much, which would potentially lead to maybe some more home runs for a ballpark that favors left-handed hitting. I'm not saying it's going to be a ton, but there's a world where we could see closer to a 300 hitter with Stephen Kwan leading off. So in front of Rosario and J-Ram and Bell and all of them, could result in 100 runs scored and a lot of steals. So it's a lot of what ifs. I get that. It's a lot of what ifs. But it was stuff that I didn't even really notice before he brought to my attention that really kind of maybe Kwan's a little better. Now, he has zero power as of now, unless he really makes a swing adjustment. So that's true. This is where it's tough for me, because I say it all the time that you have to prove it to me more than once. Jake McCarthy did it for half a season. That was the tough part for me. It's I need to see it again.
Yep.
So I'm going to go Stephen Kwan. But I'm not over the moon, and I'm hoping it's the batting average spike that does it for me with Stephen Kwan, because it's another stat. I think, the pitching side, we talk about whip, run scored is not talked about enough in the hitting side. I never focus. I know I'm not alone. I rarely ever focused on run scored, but if you can get a leadoff batter that maybe hits 300 in that lineup, gets 100 runs, it's pretty nice. So I'll go Stephen Kwan.
I think batting average is underappreciated too. I think I plugged it before, but Stephen Weimer did a great article for FTN Baseball Draft Guide about how scarce batting average can become. I know we just said there's a few good batting average guys in this group, but 300 for the number of plate appearances that Kwan puts together really does make an impact. It's funny, the end of, I don't know if you snuck in and wrote this in the forecaster, but Kwan's last sentence is budget for dongs elsewhere.
So. That would be something I would write. What the hell? 100% something. I want to know how that got past the editors at HQ, because if that's allowed, my articles next year are going to be electric.
We see a lot of daily matchup dongs. And
if that's allowed in the forecaster, daily matchups on Friday mornings are going to be awesome, everybody. Just throwing that out there to you.
That was courtesy of Alan DeLeonardis.
Our bird-watching buddy.
Yes, that's right. Friend of the show and birdwatch. We did not talk. He was at first pitch too. We didn't take.
I know we didn't talk birds. We did not talk birds. All right. The last ADP debate is yours.
All right. So this one, it's just interesting, kind of like two random guys, but same exact ADP, same exact ATC projection. So Nick Castellanos and Taylor Ward are projected by ATC to hit 264 with 22 homers. 5 home runs on the dot, ADPs of 133 and 136, respectively. So the market and the projections see these two guys as exactly the same. I think they're very different based on context and their past. But what do you think about the pros and cons of these two?
The context and the past is what really gets me. I think people that know me enough go, I'm going Team Casty on this one. Before he got hurt last season, he was doing Casty things. Like, he had like 5 home runs in May. He was hitting for average. He got hurt and really never bounced back. Him in that lineup in that ballpark, I'll give him a mulligan on this one. It's the opposite of the McCarthy. Like, let me see it again, because he's been too good for too long as a hitter to even when he's had like a down year before. He's worked on it in the offseason and come back gangbusters. So I'm going Team Casty. Nothing against Taylor Ward, but first-timer in Anaheim, and he kind of quieted down as the season went on. He came out really quick and then just kind of went through the motions, it felt like. So I'm going Castellanos on this one.
Yeah, I hate to agree with you just content-wise, but, I thought there was some adjustment to Ward in the second half, and like you said, Casty has that background. I mean, from 2016 on, his batting average every year from 2016, 285, 272, 298, 289, had hit 225 in the COVID season, but then back up to 309, 2021. Glad you mentioned the May injury. That was not going to slip through the cracks of this show. So that was, I think, played a big role in Castellanos' struggles. So great lineup. For the same reasons you just mentioned, team always Casty. A Casty guy. So there we go.
And I think it's one of the better values. Like, obviously we'll never know. We can all say that for now, but I think it's a pretty solid value right now.
Yeah.
All right. We'll do two targets and two fades each, and then we'll get some listener questions for you guys. But I'll let you go first on the targets. We'll switch roles here. Who do you got as your first target in this range?
All right. I'll do regression play, anti-recency bias play, injury rebound play. I'm going to go Tyler O'Neill. This is a guy who was being drafted, I don't know, third or fourth round last season. And last year was, we say, a bust, but he still went 14-14 and 334 at-bats. Like, on a per-game basis, Tyler O'Neill was actually was pretty good last year. Shoulder impingement, bulky left hamstring. He was out 3 separate times for 66 days. Like, he's young enough to rebound. I just think the rebound potential is fantastic with Tyler O'Neill. So he's a pretty massive target. And I actually was not on him last year at all at the price. I thought he would regress back down quite loudly, but he really didn't from a homer and stolen base aspect. So price is a lot cheaper this year coming off an injury fueled down year. So that's the formula for rebounds,
and especially at the draft price difference, it's a big target thing, similar to Casty. So with you there. I've talked about him before, but I like Willie Adames, and there's a lot of guys in this range. If people have listened to anything I've done that I like in this range, it's a team, I guess, is where I should probably be in an auction, because I could love this range. But Willie Adames, for me, I mentioned my shortstop targets, where I like to be. It allows me to not to take a shortstop early and go outfielder pitching. I believe the power is legit. It's improved year in and year out. The quality of contact has improved year in and year out with Adames up to 13% barrel rate last year, the best of his career. He's never been a massive batting average guy, like 260s where he usually lives. He was 238 last year. That was a massive BABIP drop as well. So I think there's a lot to like with Adames. He'll get you a little bit of steals, but the power, the run production, I don't see that changing. The dude's going to be 27 this year. I'll keep going back to that well. So Team Willie Adames for me.
Like you just like the name Willie. That's another reason why you do an auction is you can get Will Myers, yeah. Willie Adames, go on and on.
Get them all. Who's your next target?
There's actually not many. Well, yeah, Contreras. That's another boy. Yeah, Willie Calhoun. I don't know.
Yeah, no, not anymore. Back in the day, but not anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, my other target would be Lance Lynn. So we'll switch over to pitching. Like Lance Lynn, man, second half Lance Lynn. And I would argue this is not cherry picking the stats because of the context with Lance Lynn, who had that knee injury and did not pitch well out of the gate. But once things got going for Lance Lynn, man, his ERA in August 2.45, September 2.67, with a huge bump in swinging strikes, with a ball percentage, which is one of the major metrics I look at as a control indicator. Ball percentage, that was fantastic. So he throws strikes, doesn't give up walks. And he pitched 100 innings in the second half last year. I mentioned this is kind of my Zach Gallen from last season, where if you finish the season healthy and log a ton of innings in the second half, you're good by me from a health standpoint. So Lance Lynn is probably my favorite pitcher actually in this entire pocket, and he is going 139 in drafts. So would be very happy to have Lance Lynn as my number three starter, and actually took him as that in my last Gladiator on Sunday night.
Love that Lance Lynn call. Really good info from Mike Carter on him, that second half stuff. Oh, yeah. And some of the pitching coach stuff they had on him. Really like everything you said. I'm a big fan, and he's just a workhorse, so I'm a fan of that. Another workhorse would be the guy I have targeted. It's not even a homer play. It's just Logan Webb, 192 innings last year. Strikeout rate dropped a bit, but it's an accumulation thing with him now because he's going the innings. And more importantly, it's the ratios, 2.90 ERA, 3.31 XFIP last year. Year before, 3.03 ERA, 2.79 XFIP. So he's showing the low ratios, 111 whip, 118 whip. These are things like we talked about in this range where it kind of starts to dry up a bit, gets a bit concerning. The projections have him for a 3.65 ERA, 1.25 WHIP. I just mentioned his last two seasons, so it kind of makes me wonder how it took that big of a jump. But anything's possible. I just like what we're seeing from Logan Webb. I think he's going to still be the ace of that staff. He's going to be 26 years old, not even that old yet, kind of coming into his prime potentially. If the strikeouts can revert back to the 2021 Logan Webb, that would be tremendous. Like you'd be getting a heck of a price on him right here. At worst, though, you're going to get innings with a chance at some dubs and a really good ratio. So Logan Webb would be a target for me in this range as well.
Just one thing to add on Webb, and I agree with that, and he would be a target for me too. I liked how he had that breakout in 2021, did not rest on his laurels. He switched up his pitch mix quite a bit in 2022 through that changeup. He made a bloom board for changeup usage. Changeup was great, 15% swinging strike and a 66% ground ball rate. So he is constantly tinkering, even when he's successful, trying to get better. That's something I think that's important.
Most definitely. Let's talk a couple fades here now. Bloom, you're on here fading twice. So who's your first fade? Unless you wrote it in after I printed this out.
No, I did not pick a second fade. So I have to come up with one on the fly. I'll go with my first fade, my only fade, I guess. That's Andres Munoz, who is going right at the end of this. He's like 150. Overall, 147. He doesn't have the role in Seattle unless, I mean, I know you have a show going out with Corbin, unless Corbin agrees, disagrees. Last season, he did not. I mean, he only got a handful of saves, Munoz did last year. I mean, it was pretty much Paul Sewald who was getting the bulk of those chances. So he didn't have the role. There's no reason to assume Andres Munoz will magically have the role unless we hear from Scott Servais that has changed. And he's being drafted like a closer. And the other thing, he's coming off, I think, two surgeries.
Yeah.
And so, like, yes, Andrés Muñoz was fantastic last year, like probably the best pitcher in baseball, to be honest. But this is way yeah. too expensive for someone who's not a closer and has injury risk.
100% with you. Corbin said it's basically Sewell's job. Muñoz will get his, but now it's similar to last year. But Muñoz is there when they need a bunch of strikeouts. That's when they bring him in, he said. So at this price tag, I'm 100% with you on this. Like, great pitcher. I would grab him off the waiver wire from time to time last year to draft him at pick 150. Not happening for me. Nope. For me, CJ Cron is one, and I've been a big Cron kind of
King past. Cron.
Yeah, but you know, when Reese's Pieces is close by, someone's got to go.
That's right.
And CJ Cron's going to, you know, he's collateral damage in this situation. The power's great. The walk rate dropped a ton last year, which is a little concerning. The batting average went back to 257. The thing with Cron for me is last year's home road splits were more dramatic than usual, like pretty glaringly dramatic. And I know we just care about the end stats, and if you, you know, maybe you roster it properly, you sit him in an FBC leagues when he's, you know, not in Colorado. That's just a pain to have a whole other roster spot for a guy you draft this early, potentially. So I'm just passing on CJ Cron. Prove me wrong. I'll be cool. I'll tweet out Cron dongs all day long on Twitter. But I'm passing on him at this ADP. He's moved up. His price tag is much higher than it's been in the past. And those home road splits are very, very concerning for me.
I found my fade. I did find a second fade. I just didn't write it on the sheet. So
who you got?
I got Christian Walker.
Ooh.
First base fade. I just I don't know. You look at, I think it's just a case of, for the reason we were talking about Castellanos and Tyler O'Neill, I think this is the opposite. You're kind of buying someone off of a career year, in my opinion. And you can get Ryan Mountcastle a full round later, who the projections like just as well as Christian Walker. You can get Anthony Rizzo another round or two later. The projections like Rizzo more than Walker. You can get our boy, Rowdy Tellez, three rounds later, Josh Bell. Like, I just like the options you can go later than Christian Walker, than what he brings to the table.
I don't hate it. It's because, last year he was a lot cheaper than this. So it does make it interesting. I don't have any Walker shares yet. I love what he's doing, but I have zero Walker shares at the moment. I don't know if I'll have any. I'm not opposed to it, but yeah, it's a little tricky. My second fade, I won't use the Captain Obvious one I had written down there. You guys can figure that out pretty easily if you look at the board yourself. He plays the outfield for the Twins. But I'm going with a little more controversial one. I know a lot of people like Alexis Diaz of the Cincinnati Reds. And it's nothing against Alexis Diaz's stuff. The dude's electric. Not going to say that at all. But the funny thing about Eno Saris' stuff is he has stuff and he has command. They have to go together to be a very good pitcher. Alexis Diaz likes to walk the world because his command is down. He's like an 11 to 12% walk guy. We know in bullpen and closing situations, especially, that can be a very challenging thing, especially in Great American Small Park when two walks and a blast loses you a ball game or something. That happens often. The other thing I'll mention is, besides the walk things that concern me, is it's the Cincinnati Reds. And this is a team that we know plays bullpen roulette all the time. Maybe they'll keep him because he's that good. I don't know. But, you know, you got Diaz, you got Lucas Sims coming back, you got TJ Anton coming back. There's dudes that were out most of the season last year. This time last year, we thought were closing in Cincinnati. So they might get a chance there. There's so many moving parts in Cincinnati. I'm just avoiding it at this price tag. I'd rather take a chance on an Anton or somebody hundreds of picks later in a draft than pay a premium for an Alexis Diaz. And that's kind of where I'm out. The stuff is great, no doubt about it, but that command is terrifying to me.
Similar reasons to what I was saying with Muñoz, pretty much. So
yep.
So if you don't have a closer here, you are in trouble if you don't leave the top 100 without a closer. You're either in trouble or you're going to be spending hours every Sunday on Fab trying to find one.
Big time. So that's another takeaway from this range for sure. All right, let's get into the listener questions. As you guys came through in a big way for us this week, even on the late notice, you guys came through in a big way. We'll start it off with good old Dusty Wagner. Who's your top guy you think could give you top 50 results? And what percentage chance do you see him having in achieving that? So out of this 100 through 150 range, who do you think's your best bet to get to a top 50 player, Bloomfield?
My actual pick is Tyler O'Neill, but I won't just re-say the same reasons. He's 28 and has done it before, so that's why. On the pitcher side, I'll act just to throw a new name out there. Hunter Green. Like, I think, yes, I think the floor might be lower than some others. Like, I'd probably take Lance Lynn over Hunter Green. But from a ceiling standpoint, man, I wouldn't be surprised if Hunter Green is a top 10 starting pitcher next year. Like, if he really hits, Hunter Green is the guy you want in this range.
I think that's a great call on Hunter Green because we're talking ceiling potential. O'Neill's fine. If I'm going to take a hitter, talked about him already too, but Castellanos, if he reverts back to his former self, he's a top 50 potential player as well. We don't really have to dig too deep into that. If I need to go a pitcher here, Green's probably the call. To be a little different, I'm going to say Blake Snell. We saw the second half from Snell really turn it on. He's been a former Cy Young Award winner, so we know he's got top 10 potential. He's a guy that I have targeted at, like, outside of Webb and Lynn in this range as an SP3 for me. So I'd say Blake Snell, if he continues on with what he did in the second half last year and does it for a full season, he could be a top 50 guy for sure. All right. The next question we have here, J-Dub, in that range, neither one are in this range. Do we want to save it for next week? I can save it for next week because they'll be in next week's range.
Let's go for it.
Okay. Jose Miranda or Rowdy Tellez? This is easy for me.
Yeah, see, I talked about Rowdy. A little bit. We'll get more next week, but Rowdy for me.
Yep. It's Rowdy for me too. We'll talk deeper into it next week, but it's Rowdy, and it's pretty easy for me actually with Rowdy. So Rowdy's been on a lot of boards lately. Let's just put that way. Between Bloom
he's a Bloom board legend.
He's all over. Another guy we'll talk about next week, but our buddy SMMS79 asks, any interest at all in Stanton? He's got two questions. First, Stanton. I've been interested. If for some reason I'm still concerned with power, but it's always the injury concerns with him, and it's like in that range. I mentioned the Renfros and the other guys going around there. It's getting trickier and trickier to take Stanton from me.
I don't know. I have like a mental block of taking Stanton. I don't think I've ever taken him. The projections like Stanton quite a bit, actually, at the price. So the projections, I'm using a combination of BatX, ADC, and HQ. The projections have Giancarlo Stanton. This is assuming 600 plate appearances as the number. Yeah, big assumption as the number 40 hitter. And ADP-wise, Stanton's the number 87 hitter. So, like, if Giancarlo Stanton stays healthy or even remotely healthy, he actually, according to the projections, could pretty easily return his draft slot value.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. That's why I've been kind of torn sometimes. To me, at this range where he's going, he feels like an overall type pick. It's like I'm picking him here hoping for the ceiling play, not playing for concern. That's where Stanton comes into play right now. Yeah. The other question he has is, pick a closer from this draft range you like best and the one you are avoiding. We each picked one we avoided already between Diaz and Munoz. I'll let you pick first. We might pick the same guy, but which closer between, let's say, Bednar, Holmes, Barlow, and Bard? Are you
going to say there's not much to choose from, man? And even Barlow, that's a stretch. I will hold my nose and go Clay Holmes and hope he has the job. It's close between Holmes and Bednar for me.
Yeah, it's Holmes for me. Holmes was if we did three guys on targets, it was Holmes. And it's primarily because in this range, he has the job. And he's on the Yankees. He has a job for now. That could change.
You think he has the job?
He's going to start with the job. Okay. Does he finish it? I don't know, because the second half was not great for Clay Holmes. But it's his job to start with, and that will get me taking chances on him at this point in ADP for the Yankees. Dynasty Junkie asks, I love Lance Lynn going at 137 since Christmas. So
my man. Yep.
As a safety first type guy, I feel Bubba may feel the same way. My man. After all, there's a lot of risky upside types in that range. We've agreed on this. Strong finish 2022 in a regular offseason. Is he money in the bank here? I think we say yes, right, Ryan?
Money in the bank.
Yep. We're on the same page there, big dog. Okay, let's do a quick hitter questions here because Jack Kitchen has six players he has questions on real quick. Thoughts on Nico
Six Horton. Players real quick. Things that are not possible, but let's do it.
Yeah, Nico Horner.
Don't like the power. I get some Quan Fletcher vibes.
The biggest thing with I'm off too. The biggest concern I have with Horner is so many other moving parts in Chicago. If he scuffles at all, there's pieces to take his spot potentially. Yeah. Eugenio Suarez.
Barely sneaks in. I'm fine with him in a draft and hold. He plays. And he played a lot of games last season. So I'm fine with him in a draft and hold. The profile itself of low batting average, high home run, very vanilla. But he's gonna rack up at bats like he did last year in Seattle.
If you wait on third base, it's like him and Matt Chapman. Have at it, boys.
Yeah.
Ryan McMahon. I've always seen McMahon, so I'm in.
Yeah, projections like him, 105th hitter out of 134th ADP. So if you're going just by the numbers, it's just with Rockies hitters, man, you've got to have a plan in place, have enough bench bats to have replacements when they're on the road. You cannot start him on the road.
No, you cannot start him on the road. That's a big, big no-no. Tony Gonsolin, regression is a beast.
Regression is a beast, but he made a bloom board this week, I think, with two pitches at elite swinging strike rates. And I think it was like a splitter and slider, something like that. I'm going totally off the top of my head, but it was two pitches that were elite like that. And I don't know how much of the LA magic sticks with the new rules, but I actually think, yes, he's going to regress. He's not going to repeat what Gonsolin did last year. I think he'll be better than most think. I don't think the regression will be as severe as the market is saying it will.
Nick Lodolo. This is a fun one because it's like Hunter Green, Lodolo, kind of the conversation point. I'm a fan. There's still a lot of concerns because it is Nick Lodolo and there's walks concerns and whatnot, but I think he's pretty darn good.
Yeah, and since I was actually sort of Dusty's question earlier about like top 50 ceiling, Lodolo probably is pretty close behind Green for me with that. Lodolo had a 313 xERA last year, gets tons of whiffs, finished strong. Like you do mention the walks. Cincinnati did some things with Hunter Green to kind of get those in motion in the second half last year. I think that staff could do something similar with Lodolo. So I am actually, even though we haven't really talked about him, I'm glad he got brought up. I do like Lodolo a fair share, despite some of the risk with little track record and control.
And the last one here is Luis Severino, who he jumped back into the rotation for a bit last season, accumulating 102 innings, which was good to see after missing a couple, basically full seasons, it felt like, on the IL. And he's penciled in to take that rotation spot, maybe give you 140, 150. So if he gets me 150, I'm happy. It's just, is he going to get me 150?
Yeah, I've got him down for like 160. I'd much rather take, so with Severino, I've got very similar guys ranked near Severino are Jeffrey Springs, Brady Singer going four rounds later. So I'd go for stabs at either of those two over Severino, maybe even Jordan Montgomery.
Jomo time, baby. Jomo time. CJ Baseball asks AL Central pitchers in this range, Joe Ryan, Lynn, and Giolito. Giolito just misses, but I like him in this range of these guys. We like Lynn. That's pretty simple. I think Gio's a great the more I look into Gio, I'm a big fan of him as a bounce back. Just from what he did in the second half, the way he's tinkering with things. He's in shape already, which he wasn't last year. I'm a fan of Gio. Joe Ryan's a tough one for me. So what are your thoughts on those three?
Ryan, yeah, gets dinged pretty hard from Specs and Stuff Plus, which I mentioned in previous shows, or what I'm really leaning on a lot this year. 65th percentile Specs, 43rd percentile Stuff Plus. He comes out as the number 45 starting pitcher for me, number 40 by ADP. So he's kind of just okay where he's at, rounding like an SP4. I'd be okay with it, but not all that excited.
Yeah, it's a tough one for me to really get in love with. Let's put it that way, where he's going and other options around him.
Giolito, I have no idea. That's a tough one. I mean, there is a track record to rebound for sure.
I'm Team Gio, just because, because hearing him talk throughout the season, trying to figure things out. Again, I don't want to keep doing this, but Mike Carter. He had some good stuff here because I didn't even realize it, but Gio came in the last season 20 to 30 pounds heavier than usual because he says he loses so much weight throughout the season. He wanted to mess with his mechanics. So he's already fine-tuning his mechanics. I hate going to this, but there was videos online of him. He's gone to a, not drive line, but a different place He spent the whole offseason there. He's got a whole new mechanic set up. And the, what I took away from that, watching him on there, and I didn't even know about the weight gain thing until Carter told me, he looked in shape, like skinny, like ready to go on the mound in these pictures already. So that was a plus to me. Like, he's taking it seriously. It's January. He's in the lab. Like, let's figure this out. Because he used to be the ace. Like, he was a potential Cy Young dude. And he took a just gigantic fall off a cliff. So at his ADP, I'm willing to take a shot on a guy like that.
That's great info.
The other question he had there is Anthony Rizzo going too low? I'm starting to buy more into Rizzo. Yeah. In the Bronx, I'm buying more in Arizona for sure.
I mean, he's a 30 homer bat in the Bronx, and I, for the reason earlier why I said I was fading Christian Walker, I can get Rizzo a couple rounds later, and I think Rizzo's better.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that one. And with that, Mr. Bloomfield, pocket 100 to 150 is in the books. Any final thoughts? It's a fun range. It's a like between positions and statistics you're looking for and the lack of confident pitching targets. It's a very interesting range to kind of get an idea of. We didn't even do 1 through 100, but now we have an idea of what we want to do 1 through 100.
Which is the point. Yep. is the point. You use those middle rounds, what you like, what you don't like in the middle rounds, not even the late rounds, the middle rounds, the late rounds where you spec, you're going to cut those guys quickly. Those aren't part of your team. Usually for the entire year, these middle round guys, you're stuck with them for most of the year. So you need to build your draft plan around these guys. And so, let us know, since we've got about 4 or 5 more of these, let us know what you all like, didn't like, whatever. We can tweak it. But I thought this was pretty comprehensive of this pocket. And actually, I am in a DC where we're at pick 110. So I am like, man,
he's in the pocket. He is in
I'm
the ready. Pocket,
I'm folks. In the pocket. We are waiting on Tristan Cockcroft to pick. And
Maverick is in the pocket, and he needs to get going. Oh, you're doing the Arizona speaker draft.
This is the Arizona
speaker draft. Oh, you said Cockcroft. So I know exactly what you're doing now. Gotcha.
Cockcroft, Sedler, Carabel, Collette. It's
who are those guys? Are they any good? I've never heard of them before.
Drafted next to Spore. I had the first pick. I did not take J-Ram.
What?
I took J-Ram. I'm playing with house money. I got two. So I did a Gladiator Sunday night. And this FPAS DC got the first pick in both. So I took J-Ram Gladiator and I took Acuna in this one. Just to mix it up a little bit.
I've been getting like the first or second pick in about 80% of my drafts so far, which does not make me happy, because when I start to really spend money, I'm going to get like the worst picks possible. So
Murphy's Law.
Yep. Always fun. But we'll wrap it up there. Hope you guys enjoyed it. You can check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I'm on Twitter at BDentric. We don't like to shill out, but this is a new feed. So if you guys give a rate and review, that would help out to boost it back up to the standards we want. Cause it's going to be a big, big fun project. We're going to keep building upon throughout the years, hopefully. And I said years, cause I think it's going to be that way. But we'll be back to you guys next week with another pocket of ADP analysis and much, much more. But for now, pocket 100 through 150. Catch you guys later.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.